This episode of Writing Excuses has been brought to you by our listeners, patrons, and friends. If you would like to learn how to support this podcast, visit www.patreon.com/writingexcuses.
Season 19, Episode 7. This is Writing Excuses,
a mini-series on revision with Ali Fisher, editing for intention.
I'm Mary Robinette.
I'm Dong Wan.
And I'm Allie.
And we are delighted to have Allie Fisher back with us for this episode, where we're going to be talking about intention. And this is, you know, like how you're approaching the editing when you're not thinking about the length, but thinking about really focusing to make the book more of the book that you want it to be. There's a thing that Edgar Allan Poe said that I referenced in our last episode about writing and editing for unity of effect. And that is, in his view, what is the emotion that you want to leave the reader with? And that's something that I share as well. And I think I have certainly heard both of you talk about that quite a bit, like thinking about what effect you want to have on the reader with the book. So what are some of the questions that you ask your authors when you're trying to get them to focus their book?
Absolutely. When I'm approaching a manuscript, so much of what I'm doing in the initial pass is trying to make sure I understand very clearly what the author was intending to accomplish, right? What was the unity effect that they were going for? You know, since everyone else has a quote on this topic, I also have one, which is a Dolly Parton quote, which is figure out who you are and then do it on purpose, you know? And so much, I think, of writing a book is the process of figuring out what is this book? Who is this book? Why did you write it? And I think sometimes you'll have an idea going into it, and sometimes that idea isn't clear until you've finished it, or what you originally thought it was about turned out not to be what the book was about, right? So I think the process of writing it is often, no matter how much planning you do, discovery of what your intentions were and are and what you want them to be going forward, right? And so that's so much of the thing that's going to be informing your editing process and your revision process as you dive back into it.
I love that so much. That Dolly Parton quote makes me so happy. And it also ties into something that I just took a class with Tobias Bakel. And he was talking about finding your spark. But one of the things that he said that just set off all sorts of fireworks and sparks in my head was that you read your favorite author because of what they do well, not because of what they don't do well.
Yes.
So like, you know, snaps. When you're reading Asimov, it's not because of his characterization. Like, that's not why you read Asimov.
Nope.
Nope. Truly not.
She likes jewelry.
Woohoo!
End of character.
Yep. That's all you need, really. It goes with the diamonds.
Yeah.
But for me, it was like thinking about like really leaning into what you do well and the things that you enjoy as a representative audience member yourself as a writer.
Yeah.
So that's for me, I think, just an exciting way to think about it. It's like, what do I love about this? And how can I make it more of what I love?
It's such a good reframe. Author Joe Walton had a series of posts. I don't know if they were like critique or love letters, but they got all published in a book by Tor that was called What Makes This Book So Great? And that was what the series was called. I just thought that was such a wonderful way to approach like the reading experience, but also a very helpful way to approach the revision period, which is when you are expected and most likely will be extremely hard on yourself. And we're not talking about the full editorial process in this episode, but stay tuned until next week or 2 weeks from now.
That's the plan. Next week.
Yeah. Stay tuned. But I will say one of the things that, you know, when talking about revision and intention, I always do my best to try to remember to flag the things that rule, like what's so awesome here. Like, this made me cry. Don't touch it. You know, I want it. I want to get hurt. Let's talk about how to hurt me more. Or like, you know, what this was so great. So what else is like that, or like, what else can we do to sort of putting those flags down? I think it's just really helpful because it can be, it's a really hard time. It's a really hard time to be with the story and just remembering what all those good things is really helpful.
Yeah. I think second only to show, don't tell, which is something I complained about last episode. One of the most common repeated refrains or writing advice that just drives me bonkers is kill your darlings, right? Yeah. There's this idea that, you know, there are times when you do have to cut something you love, right? And we talked about this a little bit last time about cutting a character or cutting a scene or an element that isn't tying, that is slowing your pacing down or isn't, you know, supporting the main action of the story or the main intention of the story. But that's different from this idea that's like, oh, if you love this thing, then it shouldn't be in the book. You wrote this book. The reason we are here is because we like the things that you're doing well. I mean, this is exactly, you know, going back to Toby's quote, I don't remember the exact wording, but just this idea of like, we're reading this for a reason. And that reason is probably the thing that you're most excited about because your energy and enthusiasm and interest are going to come through, right? Now, don't overindulge in that, right? Don't like luxuriate in that at the expense of all the other elements that the book has to have. But don't kill your darlings. Love them. Find ways to support them and give them an environment that they can be best observed, appreciated, and so they can flourish for the reader.
Yeah. It, for me, it's that you have to be willing to kill them if they are pulling the book out of alignment. And that's, you know, sometimes if you've got a book that's got this really clean, spare, austere sense of language, and then you've got one sentence that has a lot of flourishes in it that you love, that sentence stands out, not because it's a bad sentence, not because you love it, but because it is in contrast to everything else that's happening in the book. It is not part of that unity of effect. There are times when you want a contrast, but you want to make sure that it's a contrast that is applied deliberately and for an effect itself.
Right. Do you want that attention? Because you're grabbing it. Like, is this the subject or the topic or the moment that needs that spotlight? Because it's got it.
Yeah. And so for me, when I'm thinking about this editing for intention, the thing that I'm, you know, coming back to is always like, why is this scene here? Why is this moment here? If I'm trying to fix something, sometimes I'm looking at it like, you know, I can't get the sentence to work, and then realize it's because it doesn't fit. And there's some part of me that knows that it doesn't belong there. And if I query like, what is my intention with this sentence? What function is it serving in this scene? That I can usually either swap it out for something different that serves better or recognize that it doesn't have one and cut it. But it is always coming to the why as my starting point.
Yeah. Well, we've talked a lot about like sort of philosophical and maybe potentially political, but like the effect that the book is having and that intention. Do we also want to talk a little bit about the intention of like how to publish it and like whether or not you're planning on going to a major publisher or publishing yourself or making it into a zine, like printing your own, you know, booklet? I think knowing the expectation or the like excitement of the reader in different spaces, or like, you know, what is most exciting to people right now, you know, like we were talking about the Oops All Battles novel in our last in our last episode, and I feel like there are certain areas that could potentially hit stronger, and I think maybe knowing where you're going with the story or where you're hoping to take the story out is a good thing to keep in mind, because there will be expectations based on whatever that publishing process looks like.
That's a really great point. There is the reason that you write is not the same reason that you publish.
I always really strongly encourage writers not to think about the market when they're drafting or coming up with a book, right? Like, don't write to the market, but what you can do is edit to the market a little bit, right? You don't want to overdo it, but there's ways in which once you have a draft of the thing and now you're sitting there figuring out like, okay, here's the book I wrote. I love it. How do I get this to in front of as many readers as I can, that's the point at which you can now start to consider, okay, what categories does this fit in? Is this for adults? Is this for teens? Is it for a middle grade audience? Is it genre? Is it literary? You know, these are sort of where you can start to edit and start tweaking things to push it in one direction or another. Sometimes it can be hard to completely do a 180 in terms of your direction once you have the draft, but you know, you can move it 10 degrees this way, 10 degrees that way. And I think start to hit a really specific audience and a specific reader that you're aiming for.
I mean, even within traditional publishing and within my work, I've had a situation where cover art comes in before the book is finished. And like, we realize like, oh, there's, you know, like there's an expectation here, like an even cozier, even like whatever expectation, let's put in more food, more delicious, like moments and like more textures. And then the sequel, like, oh, what if it's snowing and there's a cozy fire? Like, there are things that can be really surprising that can have an effect. This is obviously way down, you know, way down the line, but you might be surprised at some of the things that affect your revision by the end of the process.
I've had situations where we wrote up the copy to pitch it to a publisher, and in writing the copy, we both went like, wait a minute, there's something that's not working. There's a huge piece of this that needs to change because it just wasn't hitting. That intention wasn't coming through, both in terms of what the author was trying to get across, but also with how we were trying to publish it and who we were trying to publish it for. And so we really like took it back, broke it down, and we're like added a whole other, I think we added like 20,000 words, added a whole new character arc and a new POV based on trying to write the pitch for the book. Like, we were ready to go out with it. And then suddenly, like 6 months later, we're like, okay, now we're ready to go out with it. You know, sometimes it really is that much of a process of figuring out, you know, how do we target it for who we're trying to get it to?
I absolutely have been in the same situation where I've been like, wait, I'm like working on adjusting some copy and being like, I actually don't know what the stakes are, but I didn't care. So what does that mean? You know, like during the read, it didn't bother me, but now, you know, like, is there space for that? Is it needed? That kind of thing.
Yeah.
So when we come back from our break, we're going to talk a little bit more about intentions and how to figure out what your intention is when you've finished a book, but actually don't know what it's about.
So Dong Wan assures me that they've already pitched you Scavenger's Reign. An animated show I assume you're all now watching. It is gorgeous, vivid, kind of psychedelic, dark science fiction. And a while back, I got to work with the co-creator of that show, Joe Bennett, on illustrating two books with us. One that he also co-wrote with Dira White called I Will Not Die Alone, about learning the end is nigh and basically just playing D&D with new friends. And he also illustrated a book by comedian Joe Pera called A Bathroom Book for People Not Pooping or Peeing, but Using the Bathroom to Escape. Both are now available from Forge Books, and you should check them out.
This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. Making your mental health a priority is always a challenge. And I think it's easy to not prioritize it, especially when you're trying to figure out how to write a book. I think we have some deep cultural idea that artists should be tortured and depressed to make their best work. But in my experience, struggling to find clarity and motivation will hurt your process a lot more than help it. In my own life, therapy has been essential to figuring out how to navigate an industry seemingly designed to give all of us anxiety. Being able to talk to an expert can help you set better boundaries, find a balance between the demands of your work and your art, and navigate the complexities of being a published writer. That said, finding a therapist is never easy, especially if you're not in a major city like I am. That's where a service like BetterHelp can be of use to help you start the process while you figure out what your needs are for your mental health journey. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist. Learn to make time for what makes you happy with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/WX today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/WX. Hey, writers. Are you thinking about learning a new language? I think exploring the world, experiencing other cultures, and being able to communicate with people outside your everyday experience lets you create richer, better stories. A great way to do that is with Rosetta Stone, a trusted expert for over 30 years with millions of users and 25 languages offered. They use an immersive technique which leads to fast language acquisition. It's an intuitive process that helps you really learn to speak, listen, and most of all, think in the language you're trying to learn. They also feature true accent speech recognition technology that gives you feedback on your pronunciation. It's like having a voice coach in your home. Learn at home or on the go with a desktop and mobile app that let you download and access lessons even when you're offline. And it's an amazing value. A lifetime membership gives you access to all 25 languages, including Spanish, French, Italian, German, Japanese, and, of course, Korean. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, Writing Excuses listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/today. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/today.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Save big money on your outdoor project now at Menards. We have everything you need to keep your outdoor power equipment running smooth, so you can keep that lawn in tip-top shape or enjoy some time on your boat. Right now, all FVP, lawn and garden, and marine batteries are on sale through May 5th. Check out our entire selection of FVP batteries today and view our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more great deals.
Save big money at Menards.
So we've been talking a lot about different types of intention, but one of the things that I will hear early career writers say, and indeed have experienced myself, is, I don't know what this book is about. Nancy Kress, who is a phenomenal writer, said this thing to me that just, like, I shiver in my very bones, that she writes a draft, and that is what tells her what the book is about. And then she throws that draft away completely and starts writing again from scratch. Wow. Now that she knows what the book is about.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, I can't. But I've also heard other people and myself say this. And then someone will say like one chance thing. And I'm like, oh, that's what my book is about.
Yeah.
So how do you help your writers understand what their book is about? Like, what are some of the questions that you ask? I'm hoping for pearls of wisdom that will help me with this moment in my career.
Oh, right. How do we? No, I mean,
and I'm waiting for one. One of the things that I do is I tell them what I think it's about, and then get to watch their face and find out if they're like, "Oh no," or like, "Oh yay," or, you know, I hadn't seen that piece of it, whatever. I love to go in with a very, like, I'm often wrong, here's what I think attitude, and just sort of see what that surfaces for somebody. But in terms of actually identifying it.
Yeah. I mean, I think people ask a lot, you know, I have a undergraduate degree in English literature, and I think people ask a lot if, like, that's useful in what I do. And in most ways, it isn't, right? It's not like I learned grammar from that or how to compose prose for that. But the one thing it did give me was critical reading skills, right? And how to think critically about the stuff that I am reading, thematically, what there is in it. And it's not even so much the formal instruction that helped me do that, it's just the reading a ton of books, right? And I think this is one of the reasons why I so strongly encourage, if you want to be a writer, if you want to work in publishing, you have to like books first and foremost, and you have to read books first and foremost, and try and stay current with what's happening out there. Because when you're consuming enough media, when you're consuming those things, you start to understand why you like something, what it is about it, that even if you don't know how to articulate it, you know, when we say that we want you to understand what your book is about, I don't need you to be able to sum it up in a sentence. I don't need you to be able to tell me. In part, you wrote the book because you don't have a simpler way of explaining whatever it is that you were trying to get to with writing the book, right? And that's okay. That's great, actually. It's my job to figure out how to frame it up in a pithy few sentences so they can go on the back of a book or go to an editor, whatever it is. So, you know, I think for me, it really is putting those critical skills in place as I'm reading to figure out, okay, what is this project? What are they trying to accomplish here? What are the thematics of it? What are the things that are really jumping out at me that seem to resonate with the person behind this book? Now, that's me as a third party coming in. And again, what Ali was saying, I think is so true of sometimes it's about presenting that idea and watching it bounce off the person you talk to. And hopefully you're close. And sometimes it's like, oh, wow, I am way off here. And either something is wrong about how I read it, or there's something not working in the book. And that is always a really interesting moment. And that conversation can be a really exciting one that leads to a deeper shared understanding of what are we trying to do here? And then we can approach the edit with that sort of refocus on the intention.
When you don't have access to an editor or an agent to do this for you, because I've absolutely had that happen on The Spare Man. Claire looked at the book and said, this is a story about a woman of privilege who wants to get her hands dirty. And I was like, oh, yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah. And, you know, for me, the thing about that is that is a declarative statement. But when I go into the book, the thing that I have found most useful is to figure out what question I'm asking. And this is I'm reframing something that Elizabeth Baer said, like, you know how you're having a casual dinner conversation and someone just says something brilliant and you're like, well, that's going to shape everything I write from now on. And she said that the difference between a story and a polemic is that a story asks questions and a polemic answers them.
Mm.
And the thing for me about a novel in particular is that a novel can show so many different answers, so many different possible ways, and leave room for the reader to decide what their own answer to that question is. So for me, one of the things that helps when I'm trying to focus a story is to think about, like, what is the big question I'm asking? You know, it varies. Sometimes it's something like, how do you handle it when your spouse is depressed? You know, sometimes it's a very straightforward one like that.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes it's a big societal one, like, how do you create community? Like, what does community mean to you? Like, what are the different ways community expresses? And then when I'm writing, I can evaluate against that question. It's like, does this scene explore that question? And if it doesn't, is there a way I can add that? And if there's not, what is this scene doing? Why is this scene in here? And right. It's not that every scene has to be, you know, providing an exact answer to this, but it's, even if it's just one moment in the scene where that is explored, it still helps me, it helps me with focusing and making decisions mm-hmm. about what to include in that.
But if your book isn't feeling like it has a clear purpose, if it has a clear direction, then I think that's a great way to go about it, is asking those questions of, is this particular scene supporting the central question that I'm asking? And if the answer is no, then does this scene need to be here? Or does this scene need to shift in its purpose to better support whatever that central thing is, right? So, you know, I think being able to have some clarity about what that question is, and also what your personal connection to that question is. I see a lot of times someone will come into a book and they'll be asking a big question about society or about how a certain relationship works, but I can't feel why that question's important to the person in particular. and, you know, sometimes digging until you get that personal connection where mm-hmm. you can feel the author in the story is the thing that really makes the book pop for me. That's when I get very excited, when I can suddenly be like, oh, I see you. You're here. This matters to you because of X, Y, or Z. And, you know, sometimes it's something as simple as a shared identity, and sometimes it's very nuanced and complex in a way that could not be explained without 30 hours of conversation about the author's like life. But whatever that is, you should feel a connection to the questions that are being asked by your book, and, you know, find a way to really focus on that, make sure you're highlighting that in all the major beats of your story.
Absolutely. One of the other things that I've found along those lines is, you know, again, that personal connection is thinking about the tone that I want the book to have. Mm-hmm. Because I'm measuring against a bunch of different things. And in an ideal world, I'm just writing it and I'm feeling it and it's there. But when I'm revising it and I'm having to make decisions, you know, like my first series, Jane Austen with Magic, it's like, does this feel like Jane Austen with Magic right now? Spare Man, Thin Man in Space. Does this feel like, does it have that feel? No? Okay, fine. There needs to be more cocktails, obviously. like, you know, who's the you know, where is the small dog right now? So I think that that's another question that you can ask yourself is like, what is the tone that I want? What is, mm-hmm. what's my vibe?
Yeah.
And is this supporting it, or is it a deliberate juxtaposition?
Yeah, that's so helpful, because I do feel like purpose can start to feel sort of like academic. Mm-hmm. It can feel a little bit like intellectualized in a way that I think rightfully a lot of people would bristle against. But it can be really basic. It can be like, I want to give people a laugh, or like, I want, mm-hmm. you know, yeah. I want to show how cool explosions are, you know, like you yeah. probably
or get that cozy feeling of being by the fire, right?
Yes, like, yeah. yes. There probably is more there. If you wrote a full novel, like there's more there, but also like that is a very legitimate and exciting and cool sort of jump off point that needs to be honored in a very similar way, I think, mm-hmm. especially.
And again, yeah. it's not something you need to necessarily be even able to articulate. You just need to have a feeling of what the vibe is. And if you can lock into that vibe, that's all you need. You just need a tone, like an image, a thought, a question. Any of these things can be your guiding light. I just encourage you to try and figure out what that sort of lodestone is for you that is going to pull you through it and keep you consistent when you're asking questions about, should this stay, should this change, whatever it happens to be.
Find your vibe.
Yeah. I think that's a great segue to take us to our homework for this week. And Ali, I think you have that.
I do. Thank you for asking or telling or saying. Okay. Yes, I do. Your homework this week. Write down what you like best about your book. Find a spot in your book where you can incorporate that element where it isn't now. Godspeed.
This has been Writing Excuses. You're out of excuses. Now go edit some more. Hey, writer. Have you sold a short story or finished your first novel? Let us know. We love hearing about how you've applied the stuff we've been talking about to craft your own success stories. Use the hashtag WXSuccess on social media or drop us a line at success@writingexcuses.com. Writing Excuses has been brought to you by our listeners, patrons, and friends. For this episode, your hosts were Mary Robinette Kowal, Dongwon Song, Aaron Roberts, and Howard Taylor. This episode was engineered by Marshall Carr Jr., mastered by Alex Jackson, and produced by Emma Reynolds. For more information, visit writingexcuses.com.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of plan planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 dream beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise, having fun in the sun, or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5HETIDE.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5HETIDE.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.
Prescription products require completion of an online medication consultation with an independent healthcare provider through the LifeMD platform and are only available if prescribed. Subscription required. Individual results may vary. Additional restrictions apply. Read all warnings before using GLP-1s. Side effects may include a risk of thyroid C-cell tumors. Do not use GLP-1s if you or your family have a history of thyroid cancer.
If you've struggled for years to lose weight and have given up hope, did you know you can now access GLP-1 prescription medications at TryLifeMD.com? We're now offering eligible patients online access to GLP-1s, the breakthrough prescription medication that can help you lose body fat and weight. Listen to what people are saying.
It's fun to put on jeans that you couldn't get into 6 months ago.
Every morning, I look forward to getting on the scale.
For anybody who's struggling with their weight, it's a godsend.
And here's the best part. Your insurance may cover 100% of the cost of your medication. So go to TryLifeMD.com to have your eligibility checked right now. Get started today at TryLifeMD.com. That's TryLifeMD.com.